Karen Stark. We're in Narromine, New South Wales. There's a lot of farmers and they're involved in groups like Farms for Climate Action that can see changes that are happening on their properties they've never seen before, and there's an acceptance of climate science and a wanting and desire to do more and to see more action. But then also in some regional communities, such as the one that I live in, I think there's still a bit of climate science denial and people thinking that they've seen these types of events in the past and it's not caused by human activity. So there's a bit of a split, and I often wonder what that denial, you know, who does that serve really when there's climate science denial, because farmers are really at the coalface of climate change. At times I feel hopeful because I think things are changing. You know, there's a lot more education in schools around looking after the environment compared to when I was at school. You know, technology's changing at a pace that we require. So even with governments not necessarily following suit, we're seeing that type of change of cost dropping in renewables and the desire to move forward, consumer desires as well. But then at other times I feel less hopeful, I suppose, when I see what is happening to our natural world. So I think doing the work I do helps a little bit in terms of trying to feel that I'm doing something small towards addressing climate change. Really, it comes from the concern around climate change, what it's doing to the planet, to animals, but also really wanting to help farming families with building resilience for the tougher times ahead. We're having a climate change crisis as well as a biodiversity crisis, and those two are obviously linked, but there's also separate actions that are required to stop our mass extinctions and look after the environment. It's a very complex world, so the impact that humans have, you know, that impacts everything really, and things are so interconnected. If we lose one species, that's going to have pretty big ramifications on other species, even in the smaller, you know, insects that we might be losing now, or frogs. So I think there needs to be more discussion around that complexity and the impact that humans are having on it, and how do we value the environment in a monetary way, because it's kind of not involved, you know, not included in the GDP or, you know, in economics, so it's voiceless and it's not valued in the way it should be. Try and say to my daughter, and as children, you know, you want certain things and you want toys or whatever it is, but that takes the Earth's resources. I mean, just got to be careful with buying too much, because that is also driving the destruction of our natural world. So I don't want to give her too much to worry about it, that she's only 9, but also I think it's really important to start to consider, you know, do we really need that, or is it something that you want, and what's the impact of that, and, you know, trying to do things that are going to have a lesser impact on the world. I think with food supply, you know, I think it's important that agriculture does continue to develop and adapt to different technologies, different weather events, in order to secure our food supplies. But I think really with energy and food, we need to have a more interconnected or integrated way of thinking, so that, you know, we can do both in this region. So, you know, something like agrivoltaics is an example of that, where you grow food on the same parcel of land that you have solar panels, and there can actually be benefits to agriculture and crops that have partial shade, particularly in a warming climate. They're mostly horticultural crops, but, you know, maybe we could be looking at doing cropping, you know, wheat and barley between solar panels, which is done overseas but hasn't been done in Australia. So, you know, integrating that and ensuring that our food production is also powered by renewable clean energy, so that we're decarbonising and able to continue to trade overseas, and also showing consumers that we're a green, clean sector as well. So slowly I think we are being set up with a renewable energy zone to do that, but I think there needs to be more focus on the distribution level of allowing farmers and regional communities to produce the energy themselves, rather than these kind of massive solar and wind farms. Like, allow the community to also produce that energy, or farmers in particular, to put into the grid and trade with their neighbours, or sell to local communities and then use when they can, when they're pumping or whatever it might be. So I guess I see it as quite interconnected. Consumers have a lot of power, but in the end, I think the cost, unfortunately, is something that a lot of consumers will end up really prioritising over whether it's a green product or not. You know, I think there is more desire to see greener products. And I know a winery in the Hunter Valley that went carbon neutral. They're the first winery to do so. And they said that their sales increased about 200%, which was an unexpected benefit of doing that, because people wanted to support a winery that is proactively addressing their carbon emissions. You know, consumers, but regional communities as well need to be involved in, you know, how is this region going to be producing a power station's worth of energy to the rest of the state? And, you know, how do we benefit in meaningful long-term ways? That conversation needs to be very much integrated into the transition, and governments need to be talking to communities, developers need to be talking to communities, communities need to be talking to communities about what do we want, how do we improve the lives of people in this region through what is going to be the renewable energy zone. There's a few groups, one called ReAlliance, for example, that works to try and build knowledge and organise the community to work together to be ready for these conversations they'll be having with governments and industry. And, you know, what is it that we see in our future that investment in the res could help? You know, is it local green ammonia to urea plants that could then provide fertiliser to local farmers and then secure up supply? We're not always depending on imports for that. Or is it, you know, better telecommunications? Is it more locally owned power so the profits stay local? It's just starting to consider these things, because they are going to be important. They are going to be part of people's lives. So, and talking to others and getting involved in local groups as well.